We are live at AgoraFest in a place called Gary, South Dakota. And this, to me, is a magical experience. We're going to talk about it in podcast 863, the Bob Davis Podcasts. All right, you guys, as you know, we are here in Gary, South Dakota, and you don't think too much about plumbing when you're here in, Gary, South Dakota, because we're out having fun and we're having these great conversations. But the truth is, this is the time of the year right now when you want to do heating checks, and that's what I've been talking about when it comes to Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go metro-wide from St. Paul, so that means Plymouth, it means Inver Grove Heights, it means St. Louis Park, it means Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, Maple Grove, I mentioned, I think, twice. I don't know why. And, of course, St. Paul and Minneapolis proper. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. So if you have a business situation where you have a garage heater or you have any kind of a heating system that could go down, I often tell the story that my heating failed at one point twice in the last couple of years. And I do believe that if heating checks were employed, we probably would have been a little bit better off. So Ryan Plumbing and Heating has been doing business for over 60 years, four generations in Frogtown, in St. Paul. You call 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, online at ryanplumbing.com. So we got the doors open on mobile podcast command. It's, what time is it anyway? I don't even know what time it is.
10:29.
Oh, no, that's not right. That's the death clock in the ambulance. I don't know. That thing has never been right. Somebody died and it stopped at that point. No, it's 11 o'clock p.m. I thought it was much later than that. We have the doors open. Hopefully we won't hear wind in the microphones. But I'm with two. Now, I'm going to do two podcasts from AgoraFest. What is AgoraFest? We're going to answer that question shortly. I have two friends. Cole, I don't even know your last name.
Anderson.
And Mark Johnson. Two, of the most ubiquitous sounding names that you could ever ask for.
Yeah, so, sorry about that.
Yeah, we're going to have to close this door. Hang on. So one of the things that's interesting about South Dakota is there's wind. And it is warm. Like, it's been warm all day. It's still warm. And so I've got the back doors open. And I don't like to keep the doors open because I don't have screens. And, of course, every creature in the world. But there's enough wind tonight that they're not just buzzing around. So I'm at this thing called AgoraFest. We're going to talk about what AgoraFest is in a second. But we're at a campground in Gary, South Dakota, and we've just been... when you come to AgoraFest, you have great conversations all day long, and it's actually exhausting. So by 1 o'clock, you're either too drunk to be able to move, or you have had, really deep conversations all day long. And, we've been having conversations off and on, and there's a bunch of crazy people here. And you mix and match, and we're not talking politics. We're not talking, specific political things, because that would be violent political speech, yes?
Correct. Yep.
And so we just have these amazing conversations about, let's see, I'm going to give you, so we started last night with Mark Johnson and I having a long conversation about life is suffering. My position is life is not suffering. His position is that it is. That took, we're going to talk about that. I talked with Wayne today extensively about Russian history and the czar, the retarded czar, who had a chance to pull Russia from the jaws of history and let it go. What else did we talk about? We talked to Nick about satellites.
We're going to launch a satellite.
Launching a satellite.
Yeah.
And so you end up having these amazing conversations about just great stuff, and it's been a great time for me, and it's a great thing to come to. So we're going to do two podcasts from here. So we're going to do tonight's podcast, and then tomorrow night we're going to get Nick. And if you ever want to come to this thing, I'll post information about AgoraFest on the blog. But it's really fun, and you guys are generally welcoming unless you prefer talking about candidates and presidents, and unless it's philosophic, candidates and presidents and wearing MAGA hats and or displaying your Elizabeth Warren regalia or whatever it is that you're doing, Bernie. This is a place to come and just hang out and talk concepts. Yes, right.
True. Well, a lot of us were involved in politics in the past, And a lot of us decided that we were just not going to be involved in politics. And moving forward, we were going to be devoting our energies to other things. And this was one of the outlets, I think, that, I've chosen to express my interest in kind of coalescing with other people who are like-minded.
Yes.
There's some people that we've met through politics, actually, in the past.
There's a lot of those people here. And
who are here, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. I don't even remember them being involved in politics.
No,
you do.
It's been so long.
It's
been a long time,
we
right.
caucus together, but...
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys are going to have to explain what AgoraFest is for the uninitiated.
Like Mark said, a number of us have been involved in politics in the past, and we found that, for the most part, politics is not a great way to fix the world, fix your life, change things, and improve what we have today. So the idea behind AgoraFest is to remove from your mind this idea that politics is a way to change things. The way we change things is we change things ourselves, in our own communities, surrounded by our own friends, in our own social groups. And we do that through, like Bob talked about, the idea of talking through these issues and finding solutions that we can figure out, or we can work towards ourselves without the interventions of the state.
Yeah, well, the state is, you know, the state is violence. It's coercion, and it's you're dealing with a situation that's not voluntary. And by coming to AgoraFest, we're dealing with people who are dealing with mutually beneficial cooperation between consenting partners, and that's the way that we think the world should work.
And this is a bunch of anarchists, but the agorist, explain what an agorist is versus and this is not my experience at AgoraFest is we've had left-wing anarchists here, and we've had the discussion between the agorists and the left-wing anarchists, and it's not one side doesn't necessarily reject the other, but explain what this is. In other words, we don't have a right and left wing of the anarchy community, let's just put it that way.
So anarchism is obviously the idea that, you know, we don't need leadership from outside groups. And agorism is a method of applying anarchism in a way where we can exchange. It's an economic theory that says we can counteract the violence of the state by trading and doing mutual partnerships in a voluntary way, you know, that
I always thought it was the market essentially the adjudicating mechanism. There doesn't have to be a government per se.
That's right. That's right. So
is the anarchist against all government? Or is
of course. That's the definition of an anarchist, right?
I would say that my true definition of anarchy means no rulers. So
government or any ruler, right?
So the idea behind no rulers doesn't mean that you don't have to have, you can't have rules. You can have rules, sure, in an anarchist environment. We just don't want individuals that dictate to the rest of the world or the rest of society how to live, how to work, what you can trade,
what you can think about, what you can say.
You can always, in an agorist world, you can always opt out, right? So in the world that we live in now, you can't opt out for a lot of things. You're born into this world, or you're born in the United States.
We're born into
United
the States, suffering.
United States citizen, and to a certain extent, you do have to suffer because, I mean, obviously, of course, there's the counteracting forces of, okay, you've been born into this wonderful America where you've been privileged with all of these gifts.
I pledge allegiance.
Yeah, I pledge allegiance to the flag, and look at all these wonderful things.
And how dare you question that, Mark
Johnson? How dare you question that, but at the same time, you're taxed before you're born. But the fact you're born means that you're taxed 12.4% of your entire lifelong income through Social Security, regardless of whether you want to opt out or not.
Well,
there's
not just
no
that,
option.
There's
to
all
opt
sorts
out,
of taxes, right? Local taxes, state taxes,
and of course, there's all the other taxes, income taxes as well, which you don't have any control
and
over.
And you're
at all.
Using that as a demonstration. It's not an anti-tax necessarily. I mean, I don't think there's too many friends of taxation here, but I don't get the impression that the agorists are these weird anti-tax people. Just so
you don't,
and I'm making that clarification because I think you know, when you say, well, I'm going to meet with these crazy people who are anarchists, and they, what's an anarchist? Well, they're this. Well, isn't that communism?
Okay.
And
No, it's not communism.
It's believing in the market and so forth.
No, no.
And then they go, those are just a bunch of anti-tax protesters.
No, no. Well, we are. Absolutely. We taxation is theft. So, you know, it's, but agorism is counter economics. Okay. And a lot of us are adherents of Samuel Konkin the third.
Right. So the idea behind counter-economics is, instead of attempting to put in place politicians or bureaucrats to change the rules that are currently in place, we simply skirt those rules. We decide these rules are immoral, they're wrong, these rules should not be followed, so we don't follow them.
Well, following the rules is immoral. I mean, you're counteracting what people believe is morally right individually. And if someone believes that a law is immoral, I mean, the question is, do I be a person who is following a law that I don't think is right, or I do the right thing? And if the right thing is mutually beneficial partnership with people, and there's no one, you know, suffering from this, why don't we do it? I mean, that counteracts me believing that life is suffering.
Well, I thought that was freedom. Yeah. I thought that was freedom.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's what agorism is all about.
We're not really. So what you're suggesting is, and this might come as a shock to some people, we're not really free. That because we're being told you can have these kinds of associations and you can have those, and you can think this, but you can't think that. So, for example, the social media scores in China, which now they're starting to talk about in the United States, or what was the rule that you just quoted today during one of our conversations about, we were talking about healthcare, and was it rule C-16 or something like that?
Well, that's in Canada. Yeah, yeah.
But it's, you know, speech it's law, close.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of thing catches. Well, it's contagious.
Right. So
Canada's doing it.
Well, okay. So in Canada, there's this law, the C-16, which is a law that says that if you're a public employee of the government, and such as a professor, and one of your students is transgender and wants to be referred to by a certain pronoun, you're required by law to refer to them by that pronoun. And if you don't, then you're fined, or you're taken to the tribunal. And if you refuse to amend your behavior, you're fined. And if you refuse to pay the fine, you get thrown in jail. Okay, so this is a compelled speech law, which requires you to you know, use your language in a certain way, which might contradict the way you believe you should speak. Okay, which is it's totalitarianism. It's taking the decision about how you behave away from you individually and ascribing that to the state. So this is absolutely a contradiction of the whole idea of individual liberty itself. I mean,
don't we have a constitution says, hey, you can't?
We haven't done that in the United States yet. But I mean, if you look at this into the future, why do you privilege transgender people to be treated with a speech that respects them right. only? Why doesn't everyone get that privilege? Why shouldn't you be able to say?
And again, this is a Canadian always, law.
Yeah, but why so. Shouldn't you say thank you to everyone in order to respect them? I mean, the ultimate, you know.
You mean, what do you mean you're supposed to say thank you?
Well,
you can't.
Why can't anyone be called the pronoun they want to be called? Why can't anyone be treated in the way they want to be treated?
I don't know what the law is, but couldn't you establish your own pronoun for yourself? Call me.
Exactly. Right. Why me Ishmael.
Why
do you have to be transgender to be called a pronoun, right? Why can't you?
Yeah, and this isn't some kind of rant against transgender people.
No. It's just like, why does the government get to choose what I get to say instead of me, myself?
Well, and what we're doing in America is what we're doing is we've created social pressure so that you're not allowed to say certain things because then you'll be blackballed.
Yeah,
When you say certain things, the mob blackballs you. So we don't have to have laws, apparently, because there's a certain path of protected speech, and then there's the path that isn't protected speech. And then when you break those rules, then you suffer the consequences of the mob lynching you. But what they do is they lynch you on Twitter or Facebook, and you've had people quote unquote calling for your head. That person should be fired. You know, they should not be able to work because they said this thing. That's what they do in the United States. Mm-hmm. And you have no defense. I mean, this is the thing with comedians now, is if they do something that is perceived as offensive, then they're done. And it used to be using certain words. Now it's just whole comedy routines where, and the comedians are all talking about, there is, comedy's dead because you can't, nothing's funny. Because that which is not funny is funny. But if you can't make fun of the stuff that's not funny, then what do you talk about as a comedian? What are we going to talk about in the second half of this podcast?
Life is suffering.
Life is suffering. He's cold, shaking his... Okay. So let me just say that one of the things about AgoraFest is, you know, these conversations that we're having, guys, are not necessarily perfect. And we're not going to be able to make perfect points about any particular topic. But all of us having these conversations as we kind of waft through these little groups that form where people are talking about things is a way to kind of make sense of the world and figure out our role in the world and what we're doing and why we're doing it and answer some questions about the world. And none of them are perfect. And you walk away from these events and you think, oh, you know, I had these conversations, but they kind of reverberate over the weeks and months after AgoraFest, and it helps define some thinking for the future. And one of the things we've often talked about in this group is revolution, and I'm going to talk about a certain kind of revolution, and that is the payment processing revolution that has been going on in this country for 20 years. And as you know, ReliaFund is one of my sponsors. ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com, R-E-L-I-A-F-U ND, and ReliaFund was one of the founding members of the payment processing revolution in this country. So what does ReliaFund do? ReliaFund specializes in integrating their systems with your systems. Most small and medium-sized businesses have back office systems for accounting and other things. They also have CRMs. They have, they might have e-commerce sites and so forth. What ReliaFund does is seamlessly integrate with those systems so that you can get payments cleared. That's what they've been doing for 20 years. There's no long-term contracts. They're secure and technology-focused. If you call them, so if you're developing back office stuff or websites for a client, if you're a developer, or if you are a business looking for a payment processor, when you call ReliaFund, you will talk to a human being, 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040. Or you can check them out online at ReliaFund.com. That is how I found ReliaFund. I wanted to have a payment processor that could produce payments or clear payments for checks, and that is what ReliaFund does for me, and they do it great. ReliaFund at R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D, ReliaFund.com. They have a great contact page right there on their website. And when you contact them, they'll get right back to you. Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry, if you call, one of those guys will get back to you if you contact them through their website. And I will tell you more about ReliaFund in future podcasts. Check them out online at ReliaFund.com. That's R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D.com, ReliaFund.com. Or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com that says ReliaFund, and you're on your way. That'll take you to their CRM. Don't forget heating checks for Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul from St. Paul Metro-wide. Get your heating checked. Now, there's going to be a storm. You might be able to hear the wind in the trees out there. I've got one of the doors open here in Mobile Podcast Command, and the wind is starting to blow because after this warm front that we have enjoyed the last couple days, there's a cold front behind it. Won't be too long before your heating is going to be taxed. You want to make sure everything's working. Call Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for heating checks, 651-224-4777. In St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, online at ryanplumbing.com. I'm going to preface this by saying this is a slice because I didn't want to record those conversations that we've been having all weekend. And by the way, what is this, Friday night? This is going to go on for another 48 hours, you know?
Indeed, yeah.
So you get into these great conversations that I never get a chance to have with in the normal course of everyday stuff, because you always invariably come back to some piece of legislation or something that happened, or who won the Super Bowl, or who got fired from the Vikings, or whatever. and you never are able to follow these trains of thought. So Mark is on this kick about talking about life is suffering. And it's like we keep having this conversation. It's kind of wafting through all the conversations. So I'll talk to you for a while, Cole, or I'll talk to Nick, or I'll talk to, you know, somebody else. And then I come back to Mark and we're having dinner and we're talking about life is suffering. So there's these sort of themes that kind of continue through the whole thing. And we were, during the break, we were just talking about, you know, this whole concept of life is suffering. I wanted to get a slice of that onto a podcast. It can't even approximate the either I'm nuts and they're great conversations or they're just not great conversations. And I think they are. But you can't approximate. But so this is a little slice because we've had this conversation all weekend. So we can talk about your assertion that life is suffering.
Life is not necessarily suffering. There are people who can go through life blissful and very productive, and you know, and then they croak and that's it. And that's fine. That's wonderful. And I think that would be ideal. I mean, it'd be fantastic if that were always the case. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. Unfortunately, we have a situation in most people's lives where you're born, and you know, you get through childhood and you get to be an adult and maybe that's fine. And maybe you don't have anything that happens to you that is challenge is tragic. But most people at some point in their life encounter a situation that's devastating, absolutely tragic, that just throws their normal situation amiss and they don't know how to deal with it.
And so your theory is that this suffering is what brings meaning to life.
No.
What I
think is, in order to deal with those tragedies, you need to counteract that by having some purpose for living, by having some way of saying, yeah, this tragedy that I wasn't able to predict suddenly happened to me. And what prevents me from totally losing all hope, right? What prevents me from just like, you know, staying in bed all day
is, you know, to have a purpose.
You need to have meaning in your life, and without meaning, you can't. So, what is the meaning? Is the question? And so, like, this is something that you don't need a tragedy to start to think about. You can start thinking about this beforehand, and you can say, okay, what is it that really means something to me in my life? What is it that I...
That's not the way you described it last night.
Well,
you
said, I had some time to think about it. I was probably pretty drunk.
I said... No, I don't think you were.
Well,
I said,
bit.
I don't believe life is suffering. And you said, oh, yes, but why do you do this? And why are you a podcaster? And finally, I got down to, you don't understand how artists think. We just do it because we want to do it. And it brings me joy, all of this. It's a struggle. We talked about the business part of it being a struggle today, I guess. But Cole just said, do you mean challenging or do you mean suffering? And then he said, that's nihilism, right? Okay,
yeah.
Explain that.
Well, the problem I have with this concept is we all face challenges throughout life. If those challenges are suffering, then I can understand where Mark is coming from. Challenges are tough. You know, you have to move through them. You have to somehow deal with them. You have to figure out ways that you're going to operate on
right.
some sort of
hence all
level.
Of the all of the what do you call it all of the memes that say, you know, don't give up, you know,
right.
keep
yeah.
fighting
yeah.
whatever
exactly
yeah.
So if that's what you're talking about, fine. But if you're actually talking seriously suffering, like everyone is suffering through life is terrible, and we have to figure out mechanisms to deal with that.
We seek
suffering.
Salvation from, you know,
I mean I know that I personally have difficulty with certain events that I've run into in my life.
Yeah, me
and
too.
Certain things that I have to deal with on a personal level, you know, things that go on with my family or with people close to me, people that I know very well, and those struggles that I've been through, those have impacted me severely in some circumstances. You know, I have stayed in bed all day once in a while because...
Who hasn't?
It's troubling. It's troubling to deal with. But those are hurdles. Those are challenges.
So you don't feel that life is suffering?
Well, I feel that we all have challenges and we all have things we have to deal with in life. And we deal with them. We figure out ways to deal with them. And truthfully, I feel I'm better for many of them. So we...
Yeah. We feel that life is a challenge, and the challenges yeah. make you stronger.
Okay.
You're saying
okay.
that's actually
well, yeah,
yeah. suffering.
No.
And that you've given your life purpose by suffering.
No, No. You don't give your life purpose by suffering. I don't think that suffering itself has any merit in itself. But I do think that, well, let's look at it this way. I've been brewing here at Agora Fest for the last 7 years. This is my seventh year doing, you know, a batch of beer. I did a Doppelbach this morning.
So right.
I got up, crack of dawn, pretty much.
Like 9:30.
pretty much.
I got up at 1.
And got all my brewing supplies out, and I started my burner, and I had the brewing liquor going, and I did my mash, I did my boil, this is a pretty complicated process, all grain brewing, right. You do this batch, and I'm not saying this is suffering necessarily, but I do things like make sure that the temperature is 150 when I do the mash. That's the temperature ideal for alpha amylase to be active, and that's what, converting the starches to sugars in the mash. I want to make sure that that's just right. Okay, I'm very careful about it. I don't want to screw this up. When I lauter, I want to make sure that the temperature of the water is over 170 degrees. So you make sure that you have full extraction from the grain. Okay, I was pretty good today, a little bit lower than I would have liked. When I did the boil, I put the hops in. I realized that the extraction was a little bit lower than I wanted, so I increased the amount of time that I did the boil so that I decreased the volume, but that's going to increase the ABV. So I have a little bit of higher gravity. The point is, I care about what I'm doing here. Okay. This is something that's meaningful to
everybody
me.
Everybody does something. I'm doing the podcasting. You're doing the beer. Cole's doing the mesh network.
Was I forced to brew this batch of beer this morning?
And Joel, by the way.
No, I was not forced to do this. This is something that was of my own volition.
But it's you created your own challenge.
So this is something that you have to think about. In your own, in my life, I like to order it in such that I'm doing something that I care about, that I think has meaning, that I think that there's something about this that I know will yield results.
Yes.
And so, something that's transcendental. If I am in a situation where I'm being forced to do something, I can't behave in that manner.
So there's the ego and the authentic self. So when you're in your authentic self, then it's seamless and there's not much resistance. What if you are able to stay in this perfect space of peace and tranquility in your authentic self without the ego getting in the way and saying, you should be getting more for that. You should, that's the girl you need to marry. And what the hell's wrong with you? You should have a better truck and, your beer sucks. that kind of stuff. If you can keep away from all those subroutines and just be in this space and not be in a state of wanting, then maybe what you need comes to you if you can recognize it. That's what I was trying to say last night. So you're saying, I don't get what you're saying about suffering, because what you're describing to me is someone who cares about what they do. You've created a challenge for yourself. I don't understand suffering.
Okay.
Suffering is your mother dying when you're four and you're left to fend for yourself. That's suffering. Or, by the way, we're going to cut your arm off. You're not describing, growing up in Ireland during the potato famine kind of suffering to me. Or the South during the Depression.
Unfortunately, I don't have that problem. I mean, if I did,
that's real suffering. Yeah, right.
But if you did, imagine that you're growing up with the potato famine. Your brothers and sisters have died, and you have to consider for yourself. At that point,
What if, what's the meaning
lost,
of life?
Say you've lost everything. What is the meaning of life? Why do I continue with this? Do you give up hope or do you not give up hope?
Depends on the person. A stronger person does not give up. A strong person says, I don't care. I'm going to do what I got to do to get out of this hellhole. I'm getting out. I'm going up the river. I'm going across the ocean. I'm going to do whatever I got to do because I'm hungry.
So, Mark, how would you describe suffering? How would you define it?
Well, taking upon yourself the responsibility that is incumbent upon you to do what you need to do to live your life in the way you believe it should be lived, and it's not an easy thing to do that. You need to look at your actions and your words and your life and say, am I accommodating, am I doing what's necessary to take care of myself in a way that I think it's necessary? And once you've taken care of yourself, am I taking care of my family and my friends and the people that I care about to the degree that I can? It's easy to be nihilistic. it's easy to look around and say to yourself, no, I don't care. Life has no meaning.
So that's what a nihilist says, right? I'm not familiar with nihilism, really. What is nihilism?
It's just the belief that nothing matters.
Nothing matters, right.
Okay. That's it.
So this sounds like a far cry from nihilism, what you're talking about.
Well, yeah. It's a fight against nihilism. I mean, this is all a fight against nihilism, right? I mean, it's easy to slip into that. It's easy to slip into the idea that, you know, I'm going to be dead in a few years, and 1,000 years from now, no one will remember who the hell I was. And, you know, nothing matters. I mean, how is it not easy to slip into that? I mean, I think that we've all thought that at some point.
Well, I mean, I think ultimately when we talk about politics, we're certainly saying that. We're saying, you know, are we saying nothing matters because this is we're chasing our tails politically, let's say. Is that nihilism? Saying we reject all that?
I mean, some people think that the politics is an avenue to social cooperation, which is going to yield,
yes,
you know, fruits.
I refer to it as the business of Satan. I think that I think politics is the devil's business, personally.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Once you sign up and get your election certificate or participate, you've been sucked into the great deception.
Oh, yeah, but people aren't involved in politics.
Which is why they set it up so Congress couldn't get anything done.
Well, people aren't involved in politics because they think it's going to fail. You know, they get involved in politics because they think they're doing good, right? I mean, that's I was involved in politics.
Right. And what happened? You became a nihilist.
No, I didn't become a nihilist. No. I chose to move away from politics because I chose not to be a nihilist. I chose instead of nihilism to go into avenues that I thought were productive. And because I no longer think that politics is a way.
We used to talk about this as organic work, which is we're going to build businesses, we're going to do something real in the world, and then we'll see. We'll come back around and see about this other stuff later.
Yeah, because I don't think people. I mean, there's certain avenues in local politics where I think that if you're in your city council, maybe you can lower taxes. I don't know. It's maybe possible.
He's cold shaking.
Probably not. But maybe you could be on the.
We can certainly get them to say the Pledge of Allegiance at the meeting.
One of the big problems is even libertarians raise your taxes. So I really don't think that anything that you believe you can do through politics actually comes to fruition. Most people complain about the fact that politicians don't do what they were put in office.
That's right, because I want you to do what I want you to do. I have a list here of agenda that you're supposed to do if I elect you, and then once you get in there, you get a mind of your own, and you say, oh, no, I think I want to do this, and then I'm furious at you because you didn't do what I thought if I vote for you, that means you're going to do what I want you to do.
It's not even that they've got a mind of their own. It's that someone else has acquired their mind for their own purposes.
I wouldn't say that I've quote-unquote given up on politics because I can't work in politics and do this. I feel that strongly in terms of integrity that for me to do a podcast that has anything to do with society or politics and to work in politics is ridiculous because then I'm advocating for my point of view or I'm advocating for something I agree with. So what I've really studiously tried to do in the last couple of years, and I'll tell you when it started when I started covering the caucuses down in Iowa and I got to see this quote-unquote retail politics up close where they just make these events are completely created. They're staged events and it's completely fake, but it looks real on television. And I thought, you know, I think the best thing to do is to just not pick a winner and not even be invested in a prediction of picking a winner. So people say, who do you think is going to win this or who do you think is going to win that? I even avoid that because I don't want to be attached to saying so-and-so is going to win or lose because then I'm going to think about it that way. And so for me now, I look at it from a social point of view as, well, what's going on over here and what's going on over there? And I know there's way more for me to explore that I haven't in the past that I'm kind of excited about, stuff that I haven't been excited about because as I pull further and further back, it's kind of interesting to watch these ideas percolating that everybody on one end of the spectrum, one way or the other, just completely rejects because they're supposed to. Because I'm playing for this team, therefore I have to reject it. Well, what if this is a good idea, even though it came from the quote-unquote wrong side? Maybe we should talk about it as an idea. That's what I'm doing. A far cry from the days of dabbling in being the worst basic political unit secretary in the history of politics, where you know you're supposed to do stuff, and all I did was take notes. That was that was my whole gig.
Yeah.
And remember that my second term, my speech was, yeah, I wish someone would take this over because all I do is take notes. I'm the worst party secretary in history.
You were the best party secretary. I could not believe how amazing your fingers flew.
That's all I did notes, and they were very precise too. They were literally down to the ums and the ahs.
That was
right?
Amazing.
But that's the thing for me, is to say I'm not disinterested in politics, but I have this love-hate relationship with it, in the sense that I find it so distasteful, I really have to pick the things to talk about because I can't talk about it every day. And I find in media in general is everybody's advocating, and it's almost impossible to figure out what to do. So that's my perspective. You guys have broken away completely.
Yeah, indeed.
Right. Just complete break from the whole thing, never going back.
Well, you know, I used to think the Republicans were a party of limited government. You know, when
most
I realized,
people did.
When I realized that wasn't the case, I had to depart. You know, their actions do not
suggest that they're
words.
The party of limited government.
No.
And you know, the Republican people, the Republican voters, don't want limited government.
No.
They want to use the government against the people they disagree with.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a question of limiting the government power. They're all for government power as long as, and they don't get that. This is the most fascinating thing of all. And this is violent political speech, but it's my podcast, so I can do that. You should see the way that these people treat this president is terrible. And it's like, yeah, but you're the one that posted the memes about Obama being a Muslim in the How did you think the Democrats felt about that when you were doing that? It's not the same. Well, no, it's actually literally the same. It is the same. It's just you're seeing how it feels. But see, when you punish someone, you don't feel what it's like until you get punished.
If you really think that you're going to get through your entire life without finding yourself in a situation where you're suffering, probably not going to be the case.
But I would say
you're going to find yourself destroyed at some point, and you're going to wonder where to turn, and you're going to wonder what gives your life meaning. And if you don't have something that gives your life meaning, you're going to be in rough shape.
I do have something.
And that is my point.
I do have something that keeps I really do.
You should.
As you know, we've talked about it. So yeah. I don't, you know, this is part of it, you know.
Yeah.
So you still believe, though, that life is suffering, and the only way to cope with that suffering is to find meaning in life?
Life is pain. Anyone who tells you anything different is selling something. You've seen the pictures,
and must
right?
be killed. We must kill them if they believe that. They should be suffering. Okay. In the news these days, there's lots of talk still about trade protection and about foreign manufacturing. You have President Trump telling people that, sorry guys, I said the name of the president, but anyway, telling people that they're going to have to be bringing some of their manufacturing back to the United States or all of it. So you want to be looking for an American manufacturing company that is par excellence, and that is Depot Star. American design, engineering, and manufacturing. Visit their website at depotstar.com or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. That takes you to depotstar.com. So the next podcast we do from AgoraFest will be tomorrow night in the present time frame, and that is with AgoraFest founder Nick Ludwig, and that's always a great podcast. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher.com, Spotify, Google Play, which works great. Many people are telling me they love Google Play. iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, and of course, listening on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, both streaming and also just listening to individual podcasts. I appreciate the shares, mostly on Facebook, and the retweets on Twitter and LinkedIn as well. Sharing my podcast notifications in your networks is great. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast live from AgoraFest.
I don't know how you can say the mind is suffering. You're out of your freaking mind. My life's tough. I mean, I like my life. Man. I'm life itself.
Table. And no shoes on my feet.
Doesn't really happen to the average person, but it might happen to you. Therefore, life is suffering. Always, always and forever.
No food on my table. And no shoes go on my feet. My
children cried for mercy. They got no police to call their own. Hard times.